From the Professional Disc Golf Association, this is PDGA Radio News.
We are back with another episode of PDGA Radio. Thank you for joining us. I'm Steve Hill. I'm joined by Sarah Sinclair. Sarah, I don't know about you. It's like beautiful 70-degree weather. I don't even want to be indoors recording this podcast right now. How is life in Nashville?
I was actually in the Philadelphia area the past several days, and it ended up being almost close to 60 degrees. And I was running one of those days, long story, I'll keep it short, but I ran through one of the first disc golf courses that I ever played, Bellevue Park, if anyone's ever played that in Northern Delaware. But I came back and of course it was cold in Nashville and rained all day yesterday.
Bummer.
Woohoo. Yeah.
Yeah. What's the word on Wawa? Like you were posting this on your social media account.
If you don't know,
we don't have it. Like I at least I don't think we have it on the West Coast.
You don't. Okay. So Wawa is like a convenience store on steroids. So think about 7-Eleven.
It's 7-Eleven. Yeah.
But pump it up to a 13. It started off, I believe, as just, you know, a convenience store attached to a gas station, and now it has just exploded into, so they've got the MTO screens, the made-to-order screens, and you can order everything from salads to, like, rice bowls, every kind of breakfast item that you would want, tons of different smoothies and drinks, and they've got, so I grew up near Philadelphia, and then I went to school out in Western Pennsylvania, and out there they have Sheetz, Sheetz.
Okay.
And Sheetz is basically like the Western Pennsylvania version of Wawa. So there's this whole like Wawa versus Sheetz thing. And I respect them both, but I am a Wawa girl through and through. So I go there at least one time a day, every single time I'm home.
One time a day, dang.
At least. Yeah, because it's just, it's got everything you need. And as a vegetarian, it's got like, you know, lots of different hummus and bean burritos and egg things and
sure.
Oh my god, it's just the best. You've got to go.
Yeah, I'm trying to look and see if I don't even know where.
Well, where so they're all in the Northeast, and I've actually seen them in Florida as well.
Okay, interesting.
But I think they go as south as Virginia. I think that's the southernmost point.
Do they have Slurpees though?
Yeah. Of course.
No, they don't. Only 7-Eleven has a Slurpee.
Okay, trick question. They have their version of Slurpees.
It's not as good. Anyway, I could just tell you, I'm a Slurpee diehard. Anyway, we've got more to talk about on the show
podcast
today. Besides Wawa, we're going to get to the Las Vegas Challenge that happened over the weekend. We're going to look ahead to the like official start of the season with the Disc Golf Pro Tour kicking off this weekend at the Memorial Championship. And we're also going to be joined by a Mr. Eagle McMahon. He's going to stop by for a chat, and always like having him on the show. So that should be good. Sarah, let's real quick before we get into the show, I want to just point people to a couple little pieces of news on the PDGA website. The 2020 Pro Worlds invite list is now out. If you want to register for Worlds, it shows you which tier you get to register in. So head over there right now, see if you can come to Pro Worlds. Hopefully we get to see you there in Utah in June. And on the other news front, we added three new members to the competition committee. Welcome to Steve-O Story, the Tournament Director of the Year from 2018 and the Tournament Director of the upcoming Texas State Disc Golf Championship. We also added Christy Moore and Scott Elam to the competition committee. They will be helping kind of, you know, help make decisions on the competition committee. So welcome to those players. Thank you for volunteering. If you want to learn more about the different committees that we have at the PDGA, we have a little drop down under the About section on the PDGA website. And last thing, we'll talk about it more next week, but PDGA Women's Global Event, May 9th, coming up. Sarah, are you going to play in a WGE somewhere, hopefully?
There is one in Nashville. I have not decided if I'm going to play it or not.
All right, we'll talk.
Foreshadowing
for later. We will talk about that. That's right. All right, so anyway, without further ado, let's talk Las Vegas Challenge. It took place in Henderson, Nevada. I tricked you. You thought it was Las Vegas. And it's, you know, it's like...
down the street.
It's 10 minutes from Las Vegas. And the winners, in case you have not crushed all of the video yet, which I don't blame you because a lot of video to crush.
Yeah.
Shout out to all the media teams who kind of debuted their new looks and feel for this year. Central Coast had some new graphics. Gatekeeper had some new graphics. Everything was looking pretty clean. Anyway, on the FPO side, we had a battle. It came down to the final hole, and Katrina Allen came away with the victory. Congrats to her and a $2,500 payday. And then on the MPO side, it got close for a minute, and then Mr. Nate Sexton ran away with it. He called it one of the top three wins of his career. I would imagine the other two are USDGC and Ledgestone. So congrats to Nate. Good tournament, good action. Sarah, let's start things off over on the FPO side. You know, what did you really see out of Katrina Allen this weekend? She, you know, obviously she put on a strong performance, but what did you notice in particular?
Yeah, she started off round one really strong. I know myself included, we were all kind of interested after seeing you know, some of her performance on the putting green last year and having what seemed like some nerve issues or mental issues on the putting green. And I think that was one of the things that people were most interested about watching the coverage, at least for myself.
I know I was.
Yeah. Seeing what her status was when it came to putting. Round one, she looked really confident. She really strong. Her putting was, you know, it could have been a little bit stronger, but there were a couple putts that I was like, man, that was pretty clutch. I'm super proud of her. It got a little bit touchy there during round two, and round three is where things really started to come undone a little bit. And Terry Miller actually did a really great interview with her after her win.
Yeah, it was very good. I just watched that.
Yeah.
It's right at the end of the women's final line.
Yep. So she talked about, he asked her, you know, your putting between round three and round four was like night and day. Was there sort of like a mental or physical component or something that you changed overnight that helped that? And she was like, neither. It's just pure nerves. And I remember her talking about this a little bit last season too, is that she, you know, of all of the years that she's been touring, she's never experienced nervousness like this on the putting green before. And she's not really sure what to attribute it to, but she just obviously needs to find a way to overcome it. So, you know, she talked about just getting super close to the basket, 10 to 15 feet before the round, and just putting herself into the situation of, you know, a pressure putt, and just making sure she's taking deep breaths and believing in herself, which sounds stupid, but I think it's really important just to talk yourself into the putt mentally. She and I were texting about some mantras, and this is something that I always tell people. Again, I know we joke about this last season. I'm not taking credit for any of her good putting whatsoever, but I just think this is an important point that I talk about when I do clinics. Is instead of saying to yourself, don't miss the putt, turn it around into a positive and say, you're going to make the putt. And I think that's a really important.
It's weird how much you have to trick yourself.
Yeah. Well, especially at that level. I mean, it's clearly all mental. She's a former world champion. She's got tons of titles under her belt. She knows that she can physically do it. We all do. It's purely mental and, in her case, just nerves. So it seems like she overcame that a little bit. There are a couple putts.
She mentioned how she was trying to get into more of like a proper routine,
right,
when the nerves come too, and really just focusing on that. And it was kind of interesting. I was watching her toward the end of the round on some more nervy type putts, and like I didn't count all the way, but you can tell she's kind of like rocking back and forth on a foot. And I wonder if she has like a certain number, or if it's just a comfort thing. You know, like I've always asked Nate Sexton about how many putter flips he does and stuff like that. And he says there's not really a number, because if there was a number, then if he missed on that number, I don't remember what
it's just
said,
like, but whenever you do it until you're ready kind of thing.
Yeah.
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 But just looking at her U-Disc stats, there were a couple putts that just really, I mean, she and Evelina were super close, just passing strokes back and forth. They were tied. At one point, Evelina had her by two. But holes 10 and 11, Kat made 27-foot putts. She was making you know, 16-foot putts. And that may not sound like a lot, especially at this level, but under that much pressure, the first tournament of the year where everyone's watching you, especially on the putting green, those were super clutch, and allowed her to keep fighting, and get Evelina by one. So,
yeah, I look, the thing, it's kind of wild. At one point I had looked at U-Disc. I think it was during round three, actually, mm-hmm. where I looked at Kat's putting stats and it was like, not good. And then at that point she was on hole 11 and she was putting for birdie from circle two. And I was like, you know what? She'll make that one. And she did.
Yeah.
And it's this wild thing with her where she'll crush them from circle two, but you get to that like 20 feet and in zone and it's still really dicey. And so I hope she can figure that out, because as much as like this was a really solid win for her, I don't think that you're going to be able to win all season when you're 15th in circle one X putting.
Right.
So I hope she can figure it out. It seems like she's working on it. I'm really excited to hear that, like that she's at least getting to a good place with that mentally. And if she can get to that place, watch out, because she'll blast some people. I mean, she left quite a few strokes out there. It didn't need to be close.
Right.
That said, Evelina played her heart out down the stretch. I thought her drive on 18, I thought that just took a super unlucky.
Oh my gosh. I know. And that pretty much
to kind of hit that side and go OB. That was kind of a bummer. And she had had a, you know, she looked like she was maybe losing a little bit control of the disc, later in the round, but she's fun to watch throw. Henna is fun to watch throw. The whole final women's card with Paige Hsu on it as well. Like go check out that round on the Disc Golf Guy. Really, you know, there's some shakiness on the putting green, but watching these women throw and some of the lines they're hitting, really, really impressive.
Yeah. I just want to say too, that if I didn't even think it was possible for Katrina to gain more distance, and somehow she did over the off season.
She does this every off season, dude. She goes to the gym and she gets
incredible. Yeah.
She goes to the gym and gets all pumped, and then she comes back and adds 40 feet.
Yeah. I would argue, I don't think many people would argue against me on this, but she just has this ridiculous knack for just angles, like hyzer flips and just crazy angles. And she just knows her driving and approaching ability so well and is so confident that I think she's like the best female to ever play as far as, you know, driving and approaching. Her approach shot game is just unmatched.
Yeah, her, I would say right now she is the best thrower.
Yes.
On tour, in terms of, and I think we've had this discussion, just in terms of her ability to shape shots, her ability to land correctly. Paige Pierce may be able to beat her for out and out distance, but Paige isn't always quite as dialed in with her accuracy. You know, Kat, I think, is the best pure thrower of the disc, form-wise, technique-wise, distance, shot shaping. And she's got all the different shots, too, which is really the most impressive thing. What other kind of takeaways do you have from the event? You know, we want to try and keep things relatively succinct for the listeners, you know, this season. But what else you got?
I was very impressed. You know, Paige Hsu won this event last year, came down to the wire in a playoff with Kat. It's just so funny because she talks about herself not being a super distance thrower. And she does not give herself enough credit. That said, you know, just because we talked about this last week, just because this is on ball golf courses, not every hole requires ridiculous distance. There are a lot of trees out there. There's a lot of bunkers. There's a lot of like angles as far as throwing some spike hyzers and a lot of ground play and things like that. So I was just very impressed that she was able to continue playing super strong on all three of these courses. And one thing that Madison was talking about during the commentary is that I guess Paige had, Paige had mentioned to her last year about trying to be a little bit more conservative with her, maybe with her approach shots or with her putting, just going for things. And perhaps that's why she didn't have as great of a year in 2019. And that we're hoping to see a little bit more of the old Paige, the aggressive Paige. And I think that's maybe what she brought to this event. And hopefully we'll continue seeing that the rest of the year and we'll see her on some more lead cards.
Yeah, I hope so too. I think when she's playing well and playing confidently, she can go toe-to-toe with the rest of the women.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah.
What else? Oh, Callie McMorrin. She's one of those
top five.
She's one of those all around players. During the commentary, Madison and Erica Stinchcomb were talking about how, you know, she's been spending a lot of time with Jennifer Allen, in the off season and playing a lot of smaller events with Jennifer Allen where it's like, you know, she's going to outdrive you consistently unless you start working on your distance. So she's been working on her distance. She's been working on her forehand a lot. She's got this really amazing touch forehand approach shot that was really beneficial to her for a lot of the rounds that I saw. And I think she's just a really strong all-around player. And even though she's so young, I've played with her several times. She just has very good composure. Nothing seems to really shake her. And she's just got really good vibes on the course. She's very, if you've never spoken to her, she's very, has very dry sarcasm and just has like a lot of fun. And
She's got like a little bit of swagger to her, which I think you need, you know what I mean?
Agree.
I remember we did a video with some of the up and coming players last year at the beginning of the year. And she's like, me and Haley King are going to come out and like wreck shop on this tour. She didn't exactly say that, but
I wouldn't be surprised if like, she said exactly that.
It wasn't exactly that, but it was something along those lines. Yeah. And it was great. I love hearing that. And like, you know, she didn't show out a ton last year, but I'm looking at her stats right now. And granted, she didn't hit any circle two putts. I think that's something that, especially for her skill as a putter, she will have to clean up. But several like edge of the circle 27 footers throughout the tournament. My thinking is if she keeps putting this way, there's going to be a window for her to win a big tournament this year in this field, because, you know, once we get to a course that's maybe not so demanding on for distance, you know, maybe something where she can carve some lines and then take advantage of those longer putts or that consistency inside the circle. Consistency inside the circle is something that we don't see as much in the women's field. And I think, you know, a lot of times it will play out to where the top putter that weekend can take the win when it's a full women's field. So I think we're going to see something big out of her if she keeps that up.
I agree. And she's from Tennessee, so that just makes it all the better.
That helps you.
Yeah, yeah. I had one more thing. So Jennifer Allen played in the 40 plus division.
I was surprised that she was playing in that field this weekend.
Me too. But she won by 21 strokes. She played the same courses as everybody else and ended up shooting, what did we say, three down, three under par?
Three down for the weekend. They just played the same courses, I think. It doesn't say on the website right now, like when you hover over it, it doesn't say what they played the final round.
Okay, gotcha.
So if they didn't play the end of a course, the final round, then it's not a one for one. But if it's a one for one that they played the end of a course, the final round, then she would have won the FPO division.
Yeah. And of course,
I'll see if I can track down that information.
Yeah. Different mental status. You know, you're not, if you're leading by, I don't know how many strokes she was leading by the end of the third round, but it's a little bit different mentality when you've got such a big lead.
Of course.
But yeah. Oh, and the other thing, did you happen to catch any of round three and the insane weather that came through?
No, but we had some of that insane weather in Southern California, so that would not surprise me that it was getting a little moist.
Oh my gosh. It was one of those rounds that just looked like everyone should just give up and like go home and get warm. It looked terrible. Just huge, huge raindrops that did not let up for basically
it's the desert. It gets goofy sometimes.
Yeah.
It does look like the pro fields all played the end of a course on Sunday. So that would mean that Jennifer Allen did play the same courses as everybody to the tournament.
There you go. Congrats.
All right. All right. Let's talk MPO then a little bit. We had Nate Sexton pulling out the win at the end, and just in watching this tournament and how the final round played out, I want to put to rest something that in talking to Nate Sexton, he's always trying to put to rest, and that many people, I think, don't realize this whole like conservative player thing. You know, everyone, oh, Nate's taking the safe, smart play. Oh, I think someone at one point was calling him like Nate Safeton or something like that. He's not a safe player. He's not conservative. He may play high percentage shots, but he is not a conservative player, man. Like, and I think this tournament, the final nine at this tournament shows that. Like, there's a point in time, and actually not even the final nine, it's like the final 13 or 14. Garrett Gerthy ties him up, and Nate Sexton gets it back quick and then friggin' sprints away with the thing. Like, he eagled that par four, soft par four, the hole seven, the one that Double G aced earlier in the tournament.
Yep.
He eagled that both rounds. He said he eagled it both times last year. That's not safe play. I mean, but again, you can get a birdie if you land in the sand trap there, but that's still not safe play. And then his putting down the stretch when he's running those like 60 to 80 foot dart shots that's not safe play.
So
that's,
let's label
going for the win, yeah, and trying to throw it in.
Let's label it confident play. I would say that Nate is a confident player. He doesn't overexert himself when he's not feeling like a shot is going to be high percentage. But I mean, he's been playing for years. Like, he knows what he's doing. He knows the disc selection. He's been playing these courses, and he goes for it when he deems it appropriate and what he needs to do to win.
I think there has been maybe a thought that he's not always necessarily playing to win coming with that, in that sometimes, and there are people who, or there are players who you can tell sometimes that they're playing not to lose more than they're playing to win. In this case, it was very clear he was playing to win, and he went out there, he made some huge throws, put a lot of pressure on Garrett Gerthy, and ended up running away with the thing. It was a really strong performance. He looked really good, man. Like, I'm excited to see maybe, you know, what we're getting out of Nate Sexton the rest of the season. Minus, you know, he had a 10-42 in the third round, and that was his lowest of the tournament. So he shot all of his rounds above his 10-35 by a good clip. And, you know, he was by and large, you know, he wasn't the best player in the field by rating, but he was by and large the best player in the field this weekend. So hats off to Nate Sexton, putting on a clinic with both the forehand and the approach game. I think his approach game is something that he, I think he gets credit for it. Maybe not as much as like the forehand game, though.
I saw that he was using the rat quite a bit, which I thought was interesting, because I haven't heard of a ton of people on tour using that disc. So that was kind of interesting.
Yeah, he's always willing to try something new, it seems like.
Yeah.
You know.
It's the year of the rat, right?
What's that?
Isn't it the year of the rat?
Oh, yeah. Maybe it has to do with that.
Maybe
he's really into the Lunar New Year. We'll see. So it was really solid, really great play from him. That said, great effort from Garrett Gerthy as well. Just kind of looked like the wheels came off mid to late round. He kind of lost the putt. The putt was going in for a while, and that real lofty putt, when he starts missing left or right, it's hard to get back. And then he, you know, trying to make some bigger throws down the stretch, lost a little control, but he looked good. Sarah, you were almost on it with the picks. I would have been very impressed if you locked that one down.
I know.
And then just a couple other quick takeaways just to kind of keep things moving. Hello, Tristan Tanner. Sarah, I don't know how much you got to watch of him, but this kid is explosive. Really slow, like basically a half walk up, and yeah, then just boom. Like, it's crazy. It's all acceleration, all power. I actually had a chance. It was kind of wild. I went out a couple weeks ago to play with AJ Risley when he was still in town, and Tristan ended up being in town playing. So I got to play a casual round with him a couple weeks ago. And
little did you know.
Well, I mean, that's the thing. This doesn't surprise me quite as much because that round, and granted, it was at my home course or one of my home courses, which is not a long course at all. But there is a lot of stuff to like throw over if you have the power. And man, he was just doing some goofy stuff, throwing over things. Like we didn't even get to see the full complement of shots and lines that he can hit. And I was actually really impressed because he was actually playing pretty within himself. Like he was making some smarter shots. He probably has more distance than he was showing. And he's got, you know, crazy thumbers and grenades and stuff that he can throw.
Where is he from?
He's from Colorado.
Okay. And he's 20 years old.
And I think, you know, I guess last year he was touring, had hurt his knee. You know, he's 993 rated, so he's not like the highest ever. But I think that's going to be going up. And it was really, really good to see him well composed. And he attacks the basket on the putting green. Really, really confident spin putter. You know, I hope that we get to see a little bit more out of him this year. I think it was, that was a good takeaway. And then my other player to watch, holy cow, Oskari Vikström, talk about effortless power. If you are catching up on the coverage, he was on Gatekeeper Media the final round. I think he was on the GK Pro stuff earlier rounds. He's from Finland. I think he's like 17. He looks like he is doing nothing when he throws in terms of just how easy he makes it look. He's got a really confident stroke on the putting green. He's going to do some big stuff. And then my last part on this, and this actually isn't a huge surprise when I think about it, but I was looking at some of the stats and thinking, okay, well, you know, you want to putt well here at any tournament. You want to get close to the basket. So circle one, circle two, and regulation being an indicator of success. But really, out of most of the UDisc stats that I was looking at on the MPO side, the OB rate was the best indicator of success. I think it was, you know, obviously Nate Sexton, Kale Laviska, Austin Hannum, a couple guys like that were pretty low in the OB rate and high in the standings, which makes sense on an OB lined course like this. But it was a big, there was a big difference between that. And there were some other players who maybe putt lights out or, you know, really high, you know, other accuracy, stats, but didn't come away with it. So, good tournament on the whole, good way to kick off, the A tier year. And then I thought Ricky Wysocki looked healthy. He looked confident. He looked like he was hitting some big putts. And I think some of the worry that we maybe all had about him coming into the year, he may have put some of that to rest. What are your thoughts on that, Sarah?
Yeah, I caught his first round on the coverage, and I felt the same way. I think there are a couple putts maybe that he was still trying to knock the rust off, but I think he's got some good potential to win some big events this year for sure.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Definitely. All right. Well, speaking of someone who has potential win big events, Eagle McMahon is going to stop by the show. So we're going to chat with him, and then Sarah and I will come back and talk about the Memorial Championship. So we'll be back here in just a moment on PDJ Radio. All right. Welcome back to the show, Mr. Eagle McMahon, as we embark on the Memorial Championship this week. He is coming in as the defending champ. Eagle, how's it going, man? How are you?
I'm doing well, Steve. This is the first interview of the year.
Well, people must be sleeping on you this year, but that's okay. I will take it. I always love having you on the show. I'm sure I've told you this before, but you're always one of my favorite interviews. So thanks for taking the time, man. I know we're getting close to the year kicking off. How'd your off season go? I know in years past you've always had kind of, you know, whether it's going to like Switzerland for training or really dedicating to, you know, strength training and stuff last year. You know, what were you doing this off season? How'd everything go for you?
I would say this off season followed suit to a certain extent. I was working with Seth and Disc Golf Strong, and he put together a program for a bunch of his athletes, including myself, and I stuck to that pretty religiously. I maybe did a few other things on my own, but for the most part, my off-season training consisted of his program. But I had to kind of compromise it and get a little bit later of a start to, let's just say, the upper body portion of the training due to what happened last year at USDGC. So everything was pushed back just a little bit. But for the most part, I had a pretty similar off season to 2018 and 2019.
You're kind of doing my job for me a little bit, because that was actually going to be the next thing I was going to ask. The last time I saw you, and most people, you know, saw you in action, was USDGC. You had broken your hand. So how is the hand? How'd the rehab go for that? And how are you right now heading into the season?
So the hand, it took me probably a little over 11 weeks to get it back to throwing. So one.
Wow.
Happened at USDGC, it took me to it might not be exactly 11 weeks, but until a little late in December. I remember I played an XC tier doubles event just before Christmas, and that was my first round back. So I've been throwing for a good pretty much 2 months at this point. So the hand is, I'd say, 90 to 95%. I don't really think about it anymore. The only time I ever think about it is if I want to prop myself up against a wall and try a handstand or do like a cartwheel, which I haven't tried, which you don't really need to, but you know, they're fun.
I was gonna say, was that a normal thing in your day-to-day before the injury?
It was something I was striving to do and becoming somewhat of a normal thing.
Gotcha.
And I hope it is a normal thing in the future.
So, I mean, obviously at USDGC, you could still forehand and everything. It really impacted the backhand and putting. Like, would you say the backhand and on the green, you feel pretty comfortable right now?
Yeah. I'd say the only thing that makes me uncomfortable on the green is just the constant challenge of throwing a frisbee and disc golf. And I think most people find that somewhat difficult at times, even the best players.
Oh yeah, for sure.
But as far as like me not being able to perform because of my body, I don't think that's an issue.
Now, I mean, if that kind of impacted the upper body and throwing training, like, was there anything specific you were able to add to your game this offseason, or were you aiming to add anything to your game? I mean, you're already fairly well-rounded in your skill set. Is there anything new that people might see from you this year?
I think this dog doesn't have any new tricks, unfortunately. Maybe a little bit better control. I think mostly with the new disc that we came out with, the Razor Claw Tactic, my new signature series, that's kind of created a few new shots for me, as well as I've been throwing the new Link a lot, which it's just a different flight than what I'm used to compared to our older lineup. These are newer discs, so I'm able to throw a few different lines, so it may look different, but in reality, it's just the discs.
I love how you call yourself this dog not having any new tricks. Like, what are you now, 22? 21 still?
But I've been doing this for like 6 years.
Is there a part of it that gets like routine and that you kind of need to shake things up a little bit? Like, do you ever get in a rut even though you're still pretty young?
Oh, yeah, all the time. That's like, I'm constantly trying to jump out of ruts. You got to shake it up to keep things fresh and keep you excited. If you do things the same way, you'll just become complacent, won't be exciting. So doing anything new, I believe, is crucial to stay excited.
Is that it? Can we kind of extrapolate that to some of your schedule this year? As I was looking at it, you've got, I think, 3 or 4 trips over to Europe, skipping a couple like West Coast events and stuff like that. Is that some of the reason for how your schedule is composed this year?
Yeah, for sure. We'll start next weekend after the memorial. I am flying to Spain. My Estonian friends talked me into playing this B tier in northern Spain, and I'm like, it's gonna make the schedule so packed. I'm gonna fly and I'm gonna get into Waco
Yeah, you're
on
still going to
Tuesday.
Waco afterwards.
Yeah, I'm gonna fly into Waco the
Wow.
week after Tuesday night and then be super jet lagged. And it's definitely not a good idea, but it's a great idea because I want to have fun and I want to have these super cool experiences. And I'm in a place in my game and career that I can afford to do stuff like this. So why not take advantage of it?
Yeah. So I think I'm looking at it now. You're going to the Open de España, and then after GBO and 303 Open, which is your home area, you're going over for a couple Euro Tour events. Those are what, in Denmark and Austria, those two?
Yeah, I'd say I'm probably upwards of around 80-90% going to those.
Okay.
Big reason is I like California a lot, but I also hate California. It's just really hard for me to navigate. My good friend Jeff Corns, his parents had a place in Santa Cruz. They don't have that anymore, and Airbnb prices can be pretty expensive there. And SFO is awesome. I love the course, but navigating San Francisco is such a headache.
It's not ideal. Yeah.
So I was thinking about it when it comes down to it, all I have to do is worry about a plane ticket, and then literally going to Europe is almost easier. So I figured, hey, why not?
Okay.
And let's shake it up a little bit. If I have two Euro tours, and I'm playing a third one at the Estonian Open later in the year, I could have a chance at the Euro Tour title, which could be kind of fun. Just
Absolutely. And I mean, that still goes toward your, world rankings and everything too. So like you're not sacrificing too much by maybe missing a national tour or a pro tour there. You're kind of making up for it.
yeah, and I mean, the fans could put an argument saying, "Why isn't Eagle worried about the Pro Tour, the National Tour standings?" I've been worried about them before. I'm taking a year off of being worried about those point structures.
Okay.
So it's just this year. I'm sure next year I'll probably be back playing every National Tour, Pro Tour. But you
I don't know,
know,
man. You're gonna get enough frequent flyer miles. You could probably go back over to Europe a couple times.
we'll see. We'll see. I'm just doing what looks exciting and is going to give me these cool experiences and, keep my happiness levels high.
Yeah, no, I love it. I think that's important. And then, in that vein, then if you're not worrying as much about the tour structures of points and everything, does that maybe shift your focus more to bigger majors and eyeing a world title? I've seen a lot of people already this year kind of thinking that this one could be your year for worlds. Do you let yourself think that far ahead yet?
It's very easy to daydream and just sit there and think, this year, it could be it. It could be it. And I definitely explore those thoughts sometimes, but then I realize you can't. It's good to dream, but you just got to do your best in every moment. Take one moment at a time. Just almost act like you're observing what happens. I mean, I've put in my work. And if that work is enough, I just have to sit back and watch it unfold in front of me.
I like it. All right. I want to shift gears on you just a little bit. So this last weekend over at the Las Vegas Challenge, we saw a fellow Coloradan, Tristan Tanner, really have kind of a breakout showing. I had the opportunity to play a casual round with him a couple weeks ago. He was in my area and super fun to watch, super fun to play with. What do you know about him from being in Colorado? Have you guys had a chance to spend much time together over the years?
Yeah, he's right down the road from me. He's in Longmont, which is probably like a 20-minute drive. I'd consider him a part of the Boulder Disc Golf Club even. I've seen his face quite a few times. He's playing my local tags matches, which and just to see a fellow Coloradan, and he's really young too. I think he's 19. I think he's around 20 years old.
Yeah, he's 19 or 20, I believe. Yeah.
So just to see someone from my area do that, I think that's incredible. It's great for Colorado. I'd say I know him, but I don't know him that well because he is a little bit newer to the scene, but I've definitely had a chance to talk to him and play a few rounds with him. And we're good enough friends to say what's up every time we see each other out on the road.
What's, what is it about Colorado disc golfers in this Vegas event, man? Like you and we had the year with you and obviously you winning and then Joel having kind of that breakout and then Tristan this year, like, Is there something similar? Like I look at those courses and I don't think Colorado.
Well, I don't know what it is exactly, but I have an idea. Vegas is a little bit higher in altitude. I think it's like 2,500, maybe 3,000 feet, probably around more in the 2,500 range. And it's pretty open. And if you're from Colorado, you have very few chances to throw through trees. And you have to throw hard with overstable plastic.
Okay.
So I think there's a little bit of correlation there.
You know where else is higher in elevation is Utah, right?
Yes.
I'm just saying. No, I'm sorry. I'll stop. I'm just kidding.
Oh, yeah. I've heard that from a bunch of people.
I know you have. And I know if anyone can handle talking about those things, it's you. So let's look ahead to this week then. How long have you been out in Arizona already? Because you weren't in Vegas. So how much practice have you gotten out at these courses out in Arizona for the Memorial?
So I left Colorado on February 12th, and I got into Arizona on the 14th. But I was down in Tucson. Got some family down there who have a house, really nice house, pool. And I was just kind of staying down there, doing a few more disc golf strong workouts, throwing some more shots, kind of getting used to throwing every day. Because even if you practice at home, it's way different. As soon as you start throwing every day and throwing hard shots, it's a completely different ball game. So I wanted to kind of get used to the feel again. So I was just down in Tucson tackling that. And when I was in Tucson, I got up to Vista and Fountain once. So I have a total of 3 practice rounds total in so far. And I'm going to play Vista today and Fountain tomorrow. So more practice rounds than the average person probably would get if they played Vegas, but not okay. Like something off the charts.
Gotcha. Very nice. And
it's the thing with these courses. They stay the same for the most part. And the shots really aren't too hard to figure out.
Okay.
It's more of learning how your 2020 discs opposed to 2019 discs fly on the certain holes.
Okay. So I mean you come in as the defending champion and you've obviously had a couple tournaments where you come in as the defending champion. I think back to Beaver State last year and everything like that. Is there a different mindset that you take in? Do you expect to go in and win? Do you put that expectation on yourself, or what are how's the feeling change coming in as last year's number one at this tournament?
So I was talking to my girlfriend yesterday about this, and I said I feel 4 different ways and they all contradict each other. And let me see if I can remember. It was 1, I feel like I don't want to win this tournament. But 2, I feel like all I want to do is win this tournament. And then the 3rd thing was, I don't really care if I win this tournament. And then the 4th thing is, I just want to go out and have fun. So
okay.
A lot of weird feelings there. And in my past experience, I would say this one's different, like opposed to like a Beaver State Fling, because Beaver State Fling is in the middle of the year. This is my first sanctioned event. So I feel like putting the expectation of just coming out of the gate shredding, you know, it very well could happen. And I hope it happens, but you know, you got to give yourself a little bit of leeway. All I have to do is trust that Okay, I have the tournament record. I obviously play these courses good. And if I go play one hole at a time and find a good flow, then you never know. I could find that 49 under again and be the 2020 champion. But if that doesn't happen, then I still got to go play the rest of the year and do my best.
The mental gymnastics just never end, do they?
No, you think it gets easier, but it actually gets harder.
What do
But it
you?
also it
Yeah.
comes in wave. It comes in waves. There's times where you can find a good flow state in the sport and everything seems easy, but as soon as something knocks you off that, it can be very hard to find again. But I'm glad I'm aware of that now.
I was gonna say, what do you do to try and to tackle those mental hurdles? Because obviously that was something that played into USDGC, and obviously that's much bigger tournament, end of the year, higher pressure. But what have you kind of have you tried to apply anything to your mental game or any strategies that you can share that maybe are helping you in that department?
There is a bunch of stuff. And of course, since USDGC did happen, which was a really tough time for me. Like when that happened, the feelings that I felt and the feelings that other people felt were really kind of depressing at certain times. Like just talking to my dad even and just telling them that I broke my hand. It was really difficult. And I want to take full responsibility for that. And I want that to be something that I can say I grew from. So this whole off season, I've been taking breath work, meditation somewhat seriously, and just really trying to find a calm place that I can find out on the disc golf course. So I'd say taking time away from maybe social media. You can still be on social media, but just use it as a tool. Just finding a place where you can reflect on your actions and be more accountable, I think is very key and will greatly help you in other areas of life.
All right, I got two more questions for you before I let you go. One is, do you have any bold predictions for disc golf in 2020? It doesn't have to be about you. It could be about somebody else or the game in general. Anything big and bold you expect that we'll see in 2020?
I think that this year is going to be the. I don't think anyone's going to dominate. I think it's going to be the Fields year. I
Okay.
think you're not going to see someone just out there killing it all the time. I think at any single tournament, you're going to have maybe a new winner because I think the level of play is really strong from the field at this point.
I love it. I hope you're correct because that's always my favorite when you can't exactly predict who's going to win week to week. That just makes it way more exciting to me. No
Yeah.
offense to
I
some of
mean,
the
but
people like you and
of course you could have Ricky, Paul, or anyone you'd normally see out there just shred it. But I think with like Calvin Heimberg, Kevin Jones, I mean, you got Albert Tam coming out.
Yep.
There's a lot of, I mean, Garrett, Nate Sexton, you got really great players. I think that they could surprise you. And I mean, I don't know Ricky's status. It seemed like he did pretty well at Las Vegas. And Paul, I mean, he's playing with a pretty huge ankle brace all the time. I know he killed Wintertime Open, but I mean, Wintertime Open, you're not throwing very far shots
Sure.
that time.
Yeah. All right, and then my last one before I let you go, and this is more of a non really disc golf related, but something I always like to ask you. What are you listening to music wise these days? Because you've always got something unique that you're into.
So that was true at a certain point, but over the last 1.5, 2 years, it's been almost exclusively EDM or a specific genre of EDM is trance music. I don't know if people really know what that is. It was most popular like in the late 90s, early 2000s, and mostly in like Europe. But it's basically like dance music, but a little bit more melodic, very uplifting. I just find that I can kind of find a zone in it. It's very relaxing to me, but also it's like pump up music. It's uplifting, very uplifting music that I believe is my favorite music I've ever listened to.
Is there like a specific artist people can check out if they want to explore?
There are many. I'd say the number one artist is, if you listen to like old Tiesto, Armin van Buuren, but one of my personal favorites is Gouryella. It's G-O-U-R-Y-E-L-L-A. And I guarantee you most people are going to start listening and be like, what the hell, Eagle? But give it a chance. Give it a chance. I guarantee you could find something that you'll really enjoy.
Love it. Well, Eagle, always appreciate the time and being able to catch up. Thank you very much. And best of luck this weekend at the Memorial Championship as you try and defend the title.
Thank you, Steve. Thanks for the interview.
Of course. That was Eagle McMahon, and we'll be back here in just a moment on PDGA Radio.
This week's hot rounds, four out of five of mine are from the Las Vegas Challenge, super hot. You can tell the season has very much started. So Paige,
when you get a higher quality field in those.
Exactly. So Paige Hsu, with the fifth hottest rated round, a 977 at the Las Vegas Challenge. And that was during her first round, and she finished in fourth place. My disc golf wife, Ellen Widboom, she played in the 2020 NOSO Open presented by Matt Roden. This was in Port Charlotte, Florida.
When is she coming back out to the rest of the world?
I haven't connected with her in a few weeks. I know. I need to connect with her and see what her plans are. But we talked about this last year. She kind of went on her own little tour. And I thought that was pretty cool. So, and she's from Florida, so it seems like she's sticking around that area for a little while. But
I bet if she stays around till like that throw down the mountain swing and then maybe heads out.
Mm-hmm. So she shot a 981, her first round, to take the win at that event. Congratulations, Ellen. The third hottest rated round was Evelina Solonen. She shot a 986, her first round, to finish second place at the Las Vegas Challenge. Hannah Blomros shot a 987, her fourth round, to finish third at that event. And Katrina Allen with the four-digit hot round, 1,004. That was during her second round, to finish first at that event.
It's pretty good.
Scorching.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. Over on the MPO side, we're kicking things off with a couple 1071s. Those both came during the second round of the Las Vegas Challenge from Kevin Jones and Garrett Gerthy. I believe that was when Garrett Gerthy aced hole 7. If you haven't seen that, go check it out on GK Pro. Great shot. Kevin Jones came in sixth place. Garrett Gerthy came in second place. Out at the second annual Swordstone Shiver, driven by Innova in Spicewood, Texas, we had Connor O'Reilly, a 994 rated player from Austin, shooting a 1072 rated second round to come in second place there at the Swordstone Shiver. I like that. Is that like the sword and the stone? Anyway, moving on, we have another 1072 from Mr. Nate Sexton. That was his opening round at the Las Vegas Challenge, and he went on to win that tournament. It was not wire to wire, but it was very close. I think maybe he didn't lead for like four holes. And we've talked plenty about him. Someone who we haven't talked about a lot, who was on the final round lead card, and really strong throwing display. Eric Oakley, he shot a 1076 rated third round. He ended up coming in eighth, struggled a little bit final round, but he's always fun to watch. Man, that guy's got some power for days.
Yes.
With a 1081 rated second round at the Swordstone Shiver, Nathan Queen, our buddy the lefty, won that tournament out in Texas. And the hottest round of the weekend was a 1082 rated final round courtesy of Simon Lazat that helped him climb out of a hole and come up to fifth place at the Las Vegas Challenge. You can check out more scores and ratings over at pdga.com right now. Sarah, we've got the Disc Golf Pro Tour starting this weekend with the Memorial Championship, longtime fan favorite tournament out in Arizona at Fountain Hills and Vista del Camino. What are you looking forward to for the Memorial? There's a couple changes afoot with the Disc Golf Pro Tour and how they're kind of be running some things.
I honestly can't believe that the season has already started. I'm kind of in shock about that. I am mostly interested. So the Disc Golf Pro Tour announced that the women will now be playing in the afternoon, which is a pretty big switch from the past several years when the women have played early morning. I'm interested in seeing what the spectatorship will be like, because
I am too.
Yeah, because they'll be starting when the lead card of men are still playing, and I'm hoping that that doesn't jip the women out of, you know, viewership live there on the course.
Yeah, I'm curious to see how this goes as well. And I understand what the tour is trying to do. I think some of this is media related. They did announce the Disc Golf Network live coverage, and we'll talk about that in a minute. But this was part of that. The thinking is that they can start the women later and have the MPO wrap up and then have a dedicated gallery for the women. My only thing is I am curious to see how it comes out, because you're definitely going to have those first nine holes or so where most of the gallery is going to be over with MPO. Unless for some reason it's a blowout, then things might change. But then the other component of this that I haven't really seen anyone talk about too much is, you know, where's hole 10 in relation to hole 18? You know what I mean? Like, true. if we're at a tournament, for example, you know, a place like GBO, this works pretty well, because granted, we're not implementing this on the national tour, so maybe I shouldn't use one of our events as an example, but I'm just, for the sake of events, I can think of where Tournament Central is located. That would work okay, because hole 18, relatively close to where the back nine starts. So if you finish watching the men, you go over to the women, you're good to go. But like, there's plenty of courses where you're way out on the other side. So do the spectators go there, or do the spectators hang out around hole 18, hole 17, and the FPO kind of gets a gallery late, or do the spectators hang out and try and get autographs from their favorite men's players? So there are some considerations. I like the idea. I like that the Disc Golf Pro Tour is trying it. I hope it's successful. I hope that we can get the galleries to kind of mosey over to the rest of the women's field. And a lot of this is because of this Disc Golf Network broadcast that they're going to be doing. So if you want to watch the Disc Golf Pro Tour this season, you can do so on the Disc Golf Network, which is where they're going to be doing the live streaming for their tournaments. It is a subscription-based service. They announced this last week, like 2 minutes after we published our podcast. Always. It's like the rule of podcasting. As soon as you post the episode, someone drops news. But basically, it's going to be the earlier rounds of the tournaments are going to be behind this paywall on the Disc Golf Network, plus other content. They're going to have other stuff that they're making in concert with other companies and stuff like that, podcasts, all that kind of stuff. And then the final round is still going to be free. So at the very least, you can watch final round free. But if you do want to subscribe to the Disc Golf Network, it's only $9 a month, and or like $65 for the year, I think. And if you're a PDGA member, here's where you tune in. PDGA members get 50% off the monthly price. So if you are a PDGA member and want to subscribe, go over to discgolfnetwork.com, and there's a link at the bottom that says click here if you're a PDGA member, and you can get your code to turn in for that. So, you know, that was some of the big news last week. I don't want to get in too much to the, you know, reactions to it, because ultimately I think, you know,
like, this is kind of the way the world's going. You want to watch certain things, you got to pay for it. Like, I want to watch Premier League soccer. I pay a special subscription for it. I want to watch, you know, a show that's only on Hulu. I got to subscribe to Hulu. Like, sometimes you got to do that. So, the other part is with this, the Disc Golf Pro Tour is putting a little more, pre-produced resources, I believe, into their, broadcast. So hopefully that means some more set pieces, like, you know, a little more player profiles or stories about the tournament, higher quality interviews and stuff like that. So we'll see what goes on this weekend at the Memorial Championship. But here's the deal also with the Memorial. They're giving you a freebie because it's going to be on Disc Golf Network, but it's also going to be on YouTube because they want to drive up the engagement and the interest for the first tournament. So it is free this weekend to watch the Memorial for all four rounds. So don't despair. If you don't have the subscription costs in your pocket, you have until Waco to really have to get on board.
I'm interested in the, so I've played Disc Golf Pro Tour events and have had to get up very early in the morning, which I'm used to. I get up at like 5 a.m. sometimes to work out voluntarily, but I know not everybody likes that, especially when it's cold and or raining. So I'm interested in seeing how the women like playing the afternoon.
Yeah, if there's an adjustment or if they immediately love it.
Yeah, honestly, I could see myself, you know, complaining a little bit when it's too early and then also complaining a little bit when it's like too late. Because what are you supposed to do? That's what I always ask the guys. I'm like, when your round starts at 3 o'clock, what do you do all day? Especially if you're at a, no offense, like a place like where Ledgestone is. There's not a whole lot to do. There's not a whole lot of sightseeing, things like that.
Yeah.
Like, what do you do all day? I don't want to sleep till 1 o'clock and then get up. I don't know. So I'm interested in kind of getting some feedback from the women's field and seeing how they feel about the...
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see how the routines change. Right. And then also the adjustments that they'll have to make because on, you know, national tour events or other A tiers, B tiers, whatever they're going to be playing in between pro tours, they're not going to have that set up. So it's going to be interesting. But you know what? Like, we got to try new things. We got to be adaptable, got to be flexible. So as far as the Memorial goes, pretty straightforward. There isn't a ton to talk about in terms of the actual event because it's been going on so long. You play two rounds of Fountain Hills, you play two rounds at Vista del Camino. They made that switch last year where the first two were at Fountain and the last two were at Vista. I have no reason to think that that's not happening this year. I actually believe it is. Let me go double check. By the way, our friends over at UDisc Live have rolled out some nice new little features. If you go to udisclive.com right now, it'll come up with the Memorial Championship and it's kind of the information landing page. They've got a tournament information tab that has our PDGA page for results, the tournament website, and then links to the caddy books. And then they have a round and hole information page, which Sarah and I love because we can see distances and pars of holes and it tells you what rounds they're playing when, and it has playoff procedures. So this tournament runs the same as last year. First two rounds at Fountain Hills, final two rounds at Vista del Camino. And then, you know, if you have to have a playoff, you can go read it on UDisc. And it also tells you the media coverage, such as live coverage on the Disc Golf Network, MPO lead card on Jomez Pro, MPO chase card on Gatekeeper Media, FPO lead card on GK Productions. I've been told they told me they're coming out with that next day too, which is an improvement. Those guys are crushing it. And then obviously you can follow along with Disc Golf Pro Tour social media and stuff like that. So with that in mind, Sarah, let's do some picks. You want to make some picks?
Yeah. Yes. All let's right. review we, the picks from we last week last and where we picks. Are standing. All righty. So you chose Cat to win. You got 2 points for that. And Simon to win. You got 0. I chose not Henna good. And Weiss. Yeah, I chose Henna and Wysocki to win 0-0 on that. You chose Evelina and Calvin Heinberg for your top five, so you got 1 point for Evelina. I chose Paige Hsu and Garrett Gerthy for top five, so I got 1 for each of them. That leaves you, because you kind of killed me the week before. You really killed me the week before. So you've got 8 points. I have 4 points. Womp womp. The listeners have... Okay, so I should have gone through them too at the same time. I'm still learning. They chose...
It's okay, the listener thing is new. I got it.
The listener thing is new, yes. So our listener pick, Henna to win, Henna and Simon to win, so 0 for that. Cat for top 5. and Kevin Jones for top five. So one for Katrina. So our listeners have a total of 2 points.
And you have a total of?
4 points.
And so I have a total of?
Don't make me say it again. 8 points.
Oh, sorry. I was looking up something. 8-4-2. You'd already had to say that. I'm doubling you up and you're doubling up the listeners. Listeners need a breakout performance this weekend.
I agree.
So with that in mind,
it is my week to go first.
I'm gonna give the listener pick first.
Okay, fine.
Because I think the listeners deserve that.
All right.
So listeners, your hopes ride on Andrew Lockridge, PDGA number 112-868. Thank you, Andrew, for sending in your picks this week. And he is going MPO winner Eagle McMahon, FPO winner Paige Pierce, MPO top five Paul McBeth, and FPO top five Evelina Salonen. So that is who the picks for the listeners are riding on. Sarah, you get first pick. You want to start an MPO or FPO?
I'm going to start MPO.
Okay.
McBeth.
Oh man, that was a hard one.
Yeah.
Paul McBeth.
That's all.
Highest rated player in the field. This is a very deep field. Obviously, it's like everyone's come out of the woodwork. The main thing we should mention is a lot of people who weren't at Las Vegas, such as Paul McBeth, Eagle McMahon, Paige Pierce, James Conrad, Calvin was there. Sorry. Adam Hamas, Seppo? Players like that. No, Seppo was at Vegas.
Seppo was at Vegas. Yes.
You know, there's quite a few people here that weren't in Vegas, who we get to choose from. Drew Gibson's another player. So I don't know. I'm going to go with as much as it doesn't happen a lot anymore because the field is so deep, we don't get repeat winners a lot anymore. But you know what? Eagle won the Beaver State Fling back-to-back. I'm going to say Eagle McMahon wins the Memorial Championship back-to-back. I had a nice interview with him. He seems like he's in a pretty good place. He doesn't seem like he's putting a crazy amount of pressure on himself, but I think that's a good thing. I'm going to go with Eagle McMahon.
So question. Are we going to go...
Yeah.
We didn't talk about this. Are we allowed to choose what the listeners have already chosen?
Yeah, we have okay. talked about this. Yes, we did.
We did talk about
it. We can choose. Yeah, because they're sending it in before we have a chance. That's, you know.
Very true. Okay,
we're going to double up occasionally because we doubled up last
week. I know. I just realized that. I'm just trying to, defend my.
You're just trying to make it so I can't. 2 years in a row now,
so I'm trying to defend my honor.
Yeah, well.
All right. Anyway, so. I'm going to stay. I've actually chosen 3 different women to win the past 3 weeks. Well, this will be the third. So I'm going to go Katrina. She spends her off season in Arizona. She's extremely familiar with these courses. I think she's going to continue just settling into her routine, getting over her nerves on the putting green. That is my pick.
All right. Paige Pierce, thank you. Moving on. Top five MPO. Who you got?
Oh, let's see here. I'm going to go Wysocki.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a good one.
I think he looks good.
All right. I think that I don't know who I want to pick for MPO top five because there's just too many good people in this field.
And it's the season's barely started. We don't even really know what's what at this point.
Exactly. But based off what I do know, I do like seeing that Kevin Jones played pretty well in Vegas. I think, I don't know though. Man, I'm really struggling right now, aren't I? I apologize to the listeners who are like, get to it already, dude. So I'm going to just go with Kevin Jones because he can throw and putt well. Oh. Hard-hitting analysis here on PDJ Radio.
Yeah. Yeah. Let's see. I'm going to go. I mean, this is pretty easy. Evelina won here last year. She just came in second place by one stroke behind Katrina. I think she's got a very good chance here.
All right. I'm going to go Jennifer Allen, top five.
Nice.
Arizona.
Yeah, one of her home courses.
Now. Yep. And, she should be able to do perfectly well at this tournament.
I agree.
All right. So for all of your Memorial Championship needs, you can keep an eye on pdj.com. We will have a landing page there, scores and coverage page, or you can go to udisclive.com, dgpt.com. There's a lot of places to follow disc golf now, people. Subscribe to your favorite channels on YouTube, and we'll catch up on all of the Memorial Championship next week. Should be a good time. Sarah, before we depart today, you had a kind of a personal announcement last week that you put out on social media. We were gonna maybe do it on the show, but we hadn't gotten to that point yet. Yeah. So you know, for maybe people who aren't following you on social media, which you're missing out on some dogs people.
Yeah.
You know, what's going on? What's your playing status like this year? What's going to be going on with you?
Well, first off, I will say, sorry, y'all, I'm not pregnant. That was like the first thing my family, they're like, oh, you're pregnant. Nope. Sorry.
Did you lead your post with like, hey, I have like, like, I don't remember your post like being that kind of.
No, it wasn't my post. It was when I went home this past weekend to see my family. And I said, I probably chose
built into it
no, I said I have a life announcement, and then
oh well come on,
you know,
man. Yeah,
certain people proceeded to blurt out you're pregnant, and I said I no, not happening. Not happening.
You know what?
Sorry.
I actually got
no grand
announcements this weekend. My brother-in-law and sister-in-law did tell us this weekend.
Aww,
that they're pregnant.
Their first child?
That was fun. Their first, yeah.
Oh,
yeah. So
that
was fun.
To them. I'm sure they're
anyway.
I'm sure they hang on every word of yours on the podcast.
Yeah, no. But
anyway.
Let's hear about your
yeah.
your life news. This is gonna become a thing now.
Oh god, life news.
Life news.
So basically I'll set it up. So I've been playing disc golf for over 12 years, and I started when I was an undergrad, and once I got super hooked, as we usually do, I spent every weekend either playing disc golf casually with friends or traveling all over the place to play tournaments. And then I took a year off because I did AmeriCorps. So that was just, I didn't really get to play. Then I went to grad school, same thing. I played on the collegiate team. Every weekend was dedicated to disc golf. And when I got into the workforce in 2013, same thing. Every moment of my vacation time was dedicated to disc golf. So fast forward 6 years now, and still, you know, the past several years, I get 3 weeks of vacation. Pretty much every moment of that has been dedicated to disc golf tournaments, to the point where if I want to take a personal day or someone wants to come visit or I want to go somewhere else that's not disc golf related, I can't do it, or else I have to drop out of a disc golf tournament. And that started taking a toll on me a little bit over the past couple of years. Just not having the ability to be flexible and just feeling like I was expected to play in certain events, not because sponsors were putting pressure on me or anything like that. It was mostly just putting pressure on myself and wanting to be a better disc golfer. But over time, I just got more and more burned out. And I don't think I truly realized it until late last year when I started hearing myself say things like, you know, well, so Sean and I would want to go kayaking, for instance. And I'd be like, man, I can't, like, I should really go play a practice round before I play this event this weekend. Or man, I really need to, or I really should practice putting. And 10 years ago, I couldn't wait to get out on the disc golf course. And now it just has started feeling more like a burden than a passion. So it has been very hard for me to come to this realization on my own. But also to verbalize it to other people, especially my six sponsors. I've had sponsors for 10 years now, beginning with Heiser Flip Disc Golf Apparel out of New Jersey. They're my very first sponsor. And I was kind of scared, kind of telling them this news that I was taking a step back because I just felt like it was time to do that. And I'm very happy to say that they all support me. And a lot of them were like, I get it. I've been there. You know, you put your blood, sweat, and tears into this sport. And if you've also got a full-time job and other passions and a family and all sorts of stuff, you know, it can start taking a toll on you. So, they all have understood and want to continue to support me. And so there's other things in the sport other than competing that I'm very passionate about. My Ladies and Gents doubles event that raises money for cancer research. And then the past few years, I've also done a junior grant where I sell discs and all of the proceeds go to juniors that are planning on playing in the Junior World Championships. So I'm planning on doing that. And obviously, I'm still in the podcast, so I'll be doing that as well. So I'll still be out and about, but I don't, as of right now, I don't have any tournaments on my schedule. At first, I was kind of thinking I'd play Worlds, and then I was like, you know, I would not be prepared to play that level of a tournament. I also don't really want to take an entire week of vacation to do that. I would love.
I could use an intern that week.
Well, so I here's kind of my plan. This is not set in stone, but I actually 3 years ago on Friday, this Friday coming up, we drove out to Utah to get our dog Bruno because it's very hard to find Italian greyhounds that aren't from breeders. Puppies. And so we drove out there and we immediately turned around and came back and drove home. So I haven't spent a whole lot of time in Utah. So I'm planning on going possibly for Friday, Saturday, and then possibly going to Portland with Sean for the first half of the next week because Beaver State Fling is that following week. And I've never been up to, we've talked about this a ton, and I've never been to the Pacific Northwest. And this is, I feel like, my opportunity to go in and enjoy myself and just use a few days of vacation and not feel pressure to play.
So. Well, I'm, you know, I think, like, I'm sure you came to this decision not lightly, and I, you know, I'm bummed that we won't have your insights from on the course, but at the same time, you have so much experience on the course, you can still give awesome insights. And you and I have had discussions about this. You can just go full on, like, media hack pundit now.
I'm not sure I'm going to do that.
The gloves are coming off. Sarah's going to give all the opinions all the time because now she doesn't have to see you on a card anymore. And she can say,
I was never going to play again. Yeah, I know. But the other thing is, too, if you do follow me on social media, it may seem like working out and running and fitness is like a new thing for me. It's truly not. I've been running. I've done half marathons over the past 10 years, but it's just kind of come back around in my life. And I'm feeling a lot of passion around that. I just want some, like, I want to end work on Friday and just be able to be like, oh, I don't really know what I'm doing this weekend. Maybe I'll go kayaking. Maybe I'll spend some time with my dogs. Maybe I'll see some friends. And I just feel like I've been very limited in my ability to choose what I can do on a lot of weekends. And I want that flexibility. Yeah. So that doesn't mean I'm never going to play. So going back to our original question early in the show about the Women's Global, I'm not sure if I'm going to play it. Kind of my other requirement is we only get one chance in this life. And I really want to spend as much time as possible with the people that I love. And so if there's an event where there's a bunch of women playing that I'm friends with, then yeah, I'll probably play. But if it's a bunch of strangers, then I probably won't, because I don't want to I don't want to spend a day with people that I don't necessarily know or love or like. And I just feel like I want to spend more time with the people that I cherish. So that's another part of it as well.
Yeah, no, I 100%. Respect your decision and appreciate your willingness to, like, confront something like that, because it can be difficult. And I give you a lot of credit, and I think that you know, it's also good to know that, like, there like, look, Sarah and I are on a disc golf podcast. I work for the PDGA. Sarah is married to someone who works for the PDGA. But there is more to life than disc golf. Like, there just is. And I think it's healthy to have other outlets. I mean, you've heard me say it on the show 1,000 times. I don't play competitive disc golf. I'm not a tournament player. I don't plan to be. I think about playing tournaments and I'm like, you know what? I'm okay. I'll go out for a casual round. I love watching tournaments and seeing people play, but competitive tournament play might not be for me, but you can still have an impact on disc golf without being a competitive tournament player.
Yeah,
I think
I
agree. Is kind of the moral of the story. You can donate, you can volunteer, you can be on a podcast, you can join a club, help run an event. There's a lot you can do without having to actually get on the course during a tournament round. So Sarah, I look forward to hearing more about
your adventures off the course, and you know, you're
I'm still gonna play. It's not like I'm selling all my gifts. Well, yeah, that's what everyone says. Sure. Like, well, you don't want to play, you hate disc golf and don't want to play it anymore. It's like, no, that's the opposite.
If you got any Mako 3s that you're not going to use.
Oh my gosh,
much,
I have so many. I have so many of those. I love that disc.
You just send me like one or two of them. I'll be good to go.
But I still want to play. So
I'm just saying, you probably won't need as many backups.
That's true.
Yeah. Anyway, no, that's good. I think that's honestly like a nice note to end the show on this week. Like, we can have more things in our life than frisbees, even if we do have a lot of frisbees.
Yes, I like it.
Yeah,
good quote.
Yeah.
On a t-shirt.
Well, put that on a shirt.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, we'll make a PDJ Radio shirt.
I love
my gosh. All right. Well, Sarah, thank you. I appreciate it. And sure. I love doing this show with you, and I hope that we keep having fun doing it. And I hope that listeners enjoy our semi-coherent ramblings from week to week. So with that said, if you're enjoying the show, share it with a friend, subscribe, leave us a review on your favorite podcasting app, and we'll be back next week. So Sarah, enjoy the rest of your week and weekend, which you don't know what you're going to do on yet.
I have no idea. Right? It's amazing. It feels great.
It's my daughter's birthday this weekend.
Aww.
I'm going to play laser tag.
Awesome.
I'm going to dominate some children at laser tag.
That sounds amazing.
It's fun. This is actually the second year in a row that we've done the laser tag birthday party. It's that much of a hit.
Well, give her a happy birthday high five for me. That sounds awesome.
I will. Thank you. Thank you. All right. So for Sarah Sinclair, I'm Steve Hill. This was PDJ Radio. Be good to each other, and we will talk to you next week.